Welcome to The Common Good, where we showcase the collective achievements of all that contributes to a positive and well-informed community. I'm your host, Joe Clemens. Our show this week is dedicated to the arts. We are so fortunate to be surrounded by so many opportunities to interact with art in our community, and support for the arts is so important to our commonwealth. Focusing on the performing arts, my first guest today is Barbara Richardson. Barbara is the Executive Director for Metropolitan Performing Arts. Barbara and I sit down in her office and talk about Metropolitan Performing Arts and their upcoming live stage performance of Madeline's Christmas. Later in the show, we'll replay two interviews from earlier this summer with members of the art community, Erica Worth from Roar Voices and Robin and James Dunbar from Portland Art Creations. I'm Joe Clemens, and this is The Common Good. I'm here with Barbara Richardson. Barbara is the Executive Director of Metropolitan Performing Arts, also known as MPA. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
So I met you at Hello Vancouver last week, and while I was there, I noticed you had a booth for an upcoming performance, and we're going to talk more about that. But before we do that, I did a little bit of research about Metropolitan Performing Arts, and I read that one of the things that you're organization does is enrich the Southwest Washington community through education and performance opportunities, nurturing a lifelong passion and appreciation for live arts. Question for you, why are live arts important to our local community?
Well, art in and of itself, it is important because it illustrates the human experience, and it enriches the lives of the people involved and also the people watching. We, you know, are in this age where we're always on our phones, we're on the computer, everything is so digital. Theater gives us a human being experience, which is so important. And it teaches us how to express ourselves more effectively. For myself personally, it's taught me more about myself. It's taught me to have self-empowerment. Being on stage is the surreal experience. And watching it, you know, there's all of these stories, you know, with social change and history, and so much theater is based off of literature that without it, a community doesn't really thrive. You need the arts if your community is going to grow. And it also helps with social change. And education, you know, creativity is important, and participation in theater, it improves reading comprehension and confidence and communication and standardized tests. There's some studies on theater helping with standardized tests. And overall, parents that I know, they want their kids to be involved in theater because it's something that is fun. So that's why arts are important, live arts specifically in a community.
So Metropolitan Performing Arts, you guys also are known as MPA. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your mission. Like, what's your goals here? What are you striving for?
Well, there's two parts to Metropolitan Performing Arts. We have Metropolitan Performing Arts Academy, which has classes in theater, acting, dance, and tech, because theater is on stage, but it's also behind the scenes as well. So that's one part of it. And the other part is our community theater. So community theater will involve not just kids, but also adults. And so it's neat to see the kids kind of finding themselves in the academy and then growing and working on community theater shows and working with adults. It's a really neat experience.
You have that mission, mm-hmm, and self-enrichment of the local community and also having kids participate. I'm curious about your history and how you got started here in the local community. Can you tell us a little bit about that story and how MPA came to be?
Yeah. So Metropolitan Performing Arts was established as a nonprofit in 2009. And Noah Scott was the creative director at that time. He founded it. It was originally a traveling group that performed around town. So like at the Zoo Lights and Jansen Beach Mall, nursing homes, and in 2010, April of 2010, we staged Bye Bye Birdie, which was the first musical, and it was at Fort Vancouver High School. So since then, MPA, we've produced over 35 shows in the last, 9 years, and we just keep growing. That's exciting.
Typically with something of this magnitude, I'm sure there's a large army of people that help support your mission and what you're striving to accomplish. So who are the people behind Metro that support the mission?
We have a volunteer board of directors. That is awesome. They do so much for our organization. There's myself, and we have a very, very active parent and volunteer pool of people. So all the parents, all the kids' parents that are involved in the show, they volunteer for that show. We have volunteers that are anywhere, from ushering to designing to cleaning the bathrooms of our studio to making copies. There's just a lot of volunteers, and it creates a community in and of itself with just the volunteers.
How about the instructors? Who are the folks that are actually doing the teaching around the performing arts here at MPA?
Yeah, what makes Metropolitan Performing Arts stand out, I think, in our area is the quality of teachers that we have. We have Kimba Shannon, who is a dance teacher. She teaches our dance and adult dance. She's been on Broadway. She's toured with names like Madonna and Pink and been in music videos. She's incredible. And her style of teaching is just something that you want to be a part of. We have Kristen Heller, who teaches. We have William Johnson. We have Jeffrey Puka. I know we have Amy Cole, who's been in our area for a while. She actually taught me when I was in high school vocal. So I'm really, really excited to have her at Metro. We have not just teachers, but we have our directors and our music directors and our choreographers for our shows as well. And I try to bring in new people so that kids and adults have the experience of working with different types of people, because that's important if you're going to pursue theater, to work with different types of directors and music directors. I'm really proud of the teachers that we have.
A few minutes ago, you were talking a little bit about your academy, but I also noticed that you have camps and things like that. So I want to switch gears here and talk a little bit about, if I'm a parent listening and I'm interested in getting my child away from their phone or getting away from their video games and just trying to experience something new with performing arts in the community, talk a little bit more about the academy and camps and all the other things that you guys offer here at MPA.
Yeah, sure. So Lin-Manuel Miranda is huge right now with writing Hamilton. So we thought we would celebrate Lin-Manuel Miranda this winter break and do some Lin-Manuel Miranda camps. So helped write some of the music for Moana. So we're doing a 3-day Moana camp for ages 6 to 12. And we are doing a Hamilton and In the Heights camp for teens. So those camps will just kind of be a 3-day crash course, working on scenes, working on music, working on dance. We've got Randy Davis coming in to teach that. Robert Head is now back. He used to live in town, has been in New York, and is coming back, so we're excited to have him. I'll be teaching for the teen camp, and Kimba Shannon will be doing some hip-hop, so we're excited.
Wow, that sounds like a lot. That's a lot of opportunities for parents to have their kids get involved in a lot of different things. That, if they have different interests, different genres of music or whatever, there's a lot of opportunities there. We've talked a lot about younger kids and potentially parents or grandparents or other relatives getting involved and even volunteers. How about teens? Teens are a big part of our community and help really shape how we're going to grow and be successful. So what kind of opportunities are out there for teenagers?
I'm glad you asked that. So we have a teen program that we do once a year. And our next teen show is the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. So teens, they can enroll in any of our classes. We have classes that are open to 14 through 18 year olds, and they can audition for our upcoming teen show, and it will only be teens, so there will be no younger kids in the cast. And we do have a lot of teen volunteers come too, so a lot of teens, they need volunteer hours for their school, and so we're happy to have them come and join the Metro family for that.
So that leads me into another question that I, you know, wonder about. You know, when we produce radio, there's a lot of behind the scenes work that goes on. Are there opportunities for folks that want to get involved and learn about that type of stuff? You know, production, there's probably a lot to, you know, build sets and things like that, costumes. Are there opportunities for folks that maybe not don't want to be in the spotlight, but they might like the behind the scenes work associated with this?
Yes, of course. And we do offer tech classes in lighting design, set design, sound design, and there's tons of volunteer opportunities. So even if you wanted to shadow a designer and learn, you know, what it's like to do designing for theater or construction for theater, we have some great designers that would be happy to have people shadow them. So we've got, you know, sets, we have painting, we have costumes and lots of sewing. We have props that need to be made or found, and yeah, lots of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. If I'm a mom or a dad or an uncle or an aunt, and I want to get my kids involved, how do I get started in that?
So the best way to get started is come to a camp, because it's just 3 days. We also do camps over spring break, so you can look out for that. And we do camps during summer as well. And summer is super exciting. We do a 3-week musical theater intensive where kids, they work on the entire show. So in the morning, they're working on the props and the sets and painting and costumes. And the afternoon, they're working on the scene work and learning the music on choreography. And in 3 weeks, they put a fully staged production on. So this summer, we're doing Willy Wonka. It's going to be exciting. We also, last summer, started doing Harry Potter camps, which was a huge hit. We transformed our studio into Hogwarts, and that was so much fun. Being a Harry Potter nerd myself, it was a lot of fun. So that's probably the best way to get started at first. We have our Broadway Junior program throughout the year. So we have 2 semesters a year, September through January, and then February through June. And our Broadway Junior program is for beginners, ages 6 to 12. This semester, they're doing their own version. William Johnson wrote The Town of Gruff, which is a spoof off of Billy Goat's Gruff. And they'll be doing 3 free performances at the Vancouver Community Library in January. So if you have young kids, come check it out. It'll be free. And we also have our musical theater performance workshop class, which is a 2-hour class once a week. So again, it's sort of a crash course spread out over the whole semester. And the kids are putting on a 30-minute showcase at the end of the semester. We also have our more intense program for kids that are more serious, and we can talk about that a little bit later with Madeline's Christmas. But if you want to get more involved with volunteering, then just come stop by our studio, say hi, I'd be happy to talk with you. And other ways to get involved would be with sponsorships. So being a nonprofit, we always need funding. About 20% of our kids are on scholarship right now, full ride scholarships. So we have our angel sponsors that help with kids being able to take classes, because theater rights and royalties and everything is pretty expensive. And we have corporate sponsors as well for our shows. So there's lots of ways to get involved.
You mentioned Madeline's Christmas, and that's, you know, one of the things that we're here to talk about. So that's something that's upcoming. We're going to take a break in a few minutes, but before we do that, can you just kind of give us a little teaser about Madeline's Christmas and what's upcoming for that?
Sure. So Madeline's Christmas is the last book written by Ludwig Bemelmann, and it is a story of Madeline. And during Christmas time, all the girls at the boarding school get sick, except for Madeline. She ends up taking care of them. She meets Harsha, a magic rug merchant, who sells her some magic carpets. And so there's some magic and adventures in the show. It's fun.
I'm here at Metropolitan Performing Arts with Executive Director Barbara Richardson. Barbara, I need to take a quick break, but when we come back, let's talk more about Madeline's Christmas. You're listening to The Common Good.
Many thanks to Ruby Ribbon. Ruby Ribbon is your source for shapewear, leggings, skirts, dresses, jackets, and swimsuits that empower women to look and feel their best while going after their dreams. More information available at www.rubyribbon.com/Jodi Akers. That's rubyribbon.com/JodiAkers.com or directly at 360-601-3901. Like they say at Ruby Ribbon, bye-bye bra.
KXRW is brought to you by the generous support of Hosley Eco Automotive. Hosley Eco is your source for fast, friendly, and honest service. Hybrid and electric car qualified and home of the 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty. Find out more at HosleyEcoAutomotive.com.
KXRW is brought to you by the generous support of Beacock Music, family-owned and operated since 1976. Beacock Music is your source for an extraordinary selection of products, experts, and a fun environment. Find out more at BeacockMusic.com or call them directly at 360-694-7134. Beacock Music, they're here, they're dedicated, they love what they do, and they make music happen.
Welcome back. This is Joe Clemens, and you're listening to The Common Good. I'm here with Barbara Richardson. Barbara is the Executive Director of Metropolitan Performing Arts, also known as MPA. Barbara, before the break, we were starting to get more into your next big production, Madeline's Christmas. So, for those of us that don't know the story, what's the story of Madeline's Christmas?
Well, Madeline is a series of books written by Ludwig Bemelmann, and he was a writer for both children and adults. He was also a painter and an illustrator. But kind of fun fact, he was in France and he got in a bicycle accident and he ended up in the hospital. And in the hospital room near him was a girl named Madeline. And that kind of spurred his inspiration for all of these Madeline books. And so Madeline was written, I think, in 1939. And Madeline's Christmas is the last book that he wrote before he died in 1962. So Madeline's Christmas, it's the story of Madeline and the other 11 girls at the boarding school, Miss Clavel, their teacher. There's Monsieur Brune, who's their history teacher, Mrs. Murphy, who's the cook, and there's a mouse in the show as well. And all the girls, they are preparing to go home for the holidays, but on their morning walk, it started snowing at the zoo, and all the girls didn't have their scarves, except for Madeline, because she didn't put hers in the washing machine. So all the girls get sick, including Miss Clavel, and Madeline ends up taking care of them all. So along the way, she meets Harsha, who sells her 12 magic carpets, and the girls, through a series of events, are able to fly on these magic carpets and go visit their families for the holidays. So there's lots of magic in the show. There's lots of French accents in the show. And the story all around is about being kind and helping others.
I know that the show is going to be held at the Sherman Auditorium. That's at the Washington State School for the Blind. What's the environment like there for a program for those of us that maybe are thinking about going? Kind of give us a preview of what we can expect when we go there if we've never been there before.
Yeah, so the Sherman Auditorium is located, like you said, inside the Washington State School for the Blind. It has its own parking lot, so you don't have to worry about that. And when you walk in, we will have the lobby all decorated. There'll be souvenirs and concessions for sale. On opening night, we have our red carpet event. So Mac Potts, who's a local musician, will be playing some live music. We have a VIP ticket that's for sale that includes some hors d'oeuvres from Nom Nom Restaurant, Whimsy Chocolates, and Kind Bars. And there's going to be a red carpet, and you can meet Madeline before the show. For kids, we'll have some coloring pages, and the show, the auditorium will open 30 minutes before the show starts, and our preferred seating tickets can go in first and pick their seats, and then 20 minutes before the show, general admission will be let in. So there's going to be lots of holiday atmosphere, and, it's a pretty casual environment, so you don't have to worry about getting all dressed up to go to the theater like you used to. However, we do encourage that for opening night because it's our red carpet event. So families, it's a great family show, good for kids. We recommend ages 3 and up, but you know, bring the little ones too because they'll have fun.
When is it playing?
So December 1st through December 3rd, and it's only one weekend, so you'll want to get your tickets in advance. And there's 5 shows. So 6 o'clock p.m. is our opening show on December 1st. We have a 2 o'clock and a 6 o'clock show on December 2nd, and a 1 o'clock and a 4 o'clock show on December 3rd. And the 1 o'clock show on December 3rd is our family day, so all tickets are $10.
There's a lot of ticket options. Can you just kind of run through the cost of those?
General admission for youth is $10, $12 for adults. Our preferred seating, $16, and VIP is $20.
Let's talk about the performers, the talent. Who are the folks that are going to be playing these roles? I noticed on the website there's a red group and a green group, so that's obviously two different groups of performers. So can you tell us, give us a little sneak peek into who we can expect to see?
Yeah, so all the kids in the show are ages 8 to 14, and they're part of our musical theater program. So our MTP for short, it is a program that's designed to train triple threats. So these kids spend a lot of time at our school. They're here for a music class once a week, a dance class once a week, and an acting class once a week, and then they're here 7 hours a week for rehearsal. And we've got Miss Clavel and Madeline double cast, just because it's a very large role, and we wanted to give the kids more opportunity. Yeah, that's the kids.
I'm sure there is a lot of work that goes into preparing for a performance like this that, you know, you're going to have 6 shows. But help us understand, those of us that are not in this type of work, what kind of work goes into a performance like Madeline's Christmas?
Yeah, a lot of work. So producing a show, I start my work anywhere from 8 months to 2 years before the show even opens. You know, I get my team together. So William Johnson is the director for this show. Kylie Rose is the music director. And Kristen Heller is the choreographer. And then we have all of our designers. So Mark Martin is the set designer. And we have Pat Rohrbach, who is the costume designer. Myself and Kathleen Jung are the designers for the props. And we have Roxanne DeCourt, who is our set painter. So there's a lot of people involved that way. We've got our parents who put in anywhere from 6 to 60 hours into the show. The kids, they audition the week after the semester starts. So all the kids who enroll in our program get cast in the show. But when they audition, they're auditioning for what role they'll have in the show. So they audition and then they start rehearsals the week after. And they are in, like I said, rehearsal 7 hours a week. For Dear Edwina, which is our show next semester, kids will be in rehearsal 6 hours a week, so twice a week. It's a lot of time because being in a show, it's really becomes your family, your second family. And for a lot of these kids, it is their family and it is their friends, and they look forward to coming to our school because it's the only place they feel like they can be themselves. As far as the design work on the other end, you know, we meet as a group once a week and we talk about, you know, we check in with each other and, you know, putting in all those hours for making all the costumes, 12 matching coats and 12 matching jumpers. And the design for this show, we really want it to look like Ludwig Bemelmann's book is coming to life. I forgot to mention James Pearson. He's our lighting designer and projection designer for this show. And so all of us are working together, trying to get on the same page as far as the look of the show. And it's a very collaborative process, figuring out, you know, all the magic and what it's going to look like. But everything is 2D and it looks like it's coming out of the book. So we're excited.
So if folks are interested in buying a ticket, or they're just interested in finding out more information about MPA as an organization, where can they go?
Go to our website, www.metropolitanperformingarts.org. And There's information for our classes, for our camps, for summer, winter, spring, and information for upcoming auditions and future shows. So we are collaborating with the Kickin' Cedar, doing a radio Christmas carol December 20th. And then, of course, our free performances at the Vancouver Library with our Broadway Junior program, and then auditions and classes starting in February for our next semester. So yeah, metropolitanperformingarts.org, or you can call our office at 360-975-1585.
The show is Madeline's Christmas. Opening night is Friday, December 1st at the Sherman Auditorium at the Washington State School for the Blind. For those of you that don't know where that's at, it's at 2201 East McLaughlin right here in Vancouver. Barbara Richardson, Executive Director of Metropolitan Performing Arts, thanks so much for joining us today. I really do appreciate it. Promise me you'll come back and give us an update on future programs and what you're up to.
Yeah, I would love to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
CircleOfPeace.org is committed to strengthening the bonds of humanity, compassion, and unity among all people. They'll be hosting a Conversations with Muslims event Sunday, December 10th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Vancouver Community Library at 901 C Street in Vancouver, Washington. Admission is free, but seating is limited. Go to CircleOfPeace.org, then click on the Conversations with Muslims link on the right side of the homepage to learn more and reserve your seat. Many thanks to KXRW supporter Adco Printing and Graphics. Owner Bill Dickey and his friendly staff have been serving the Vancouver community since 1995. They offer all the services you'd expect from a commercial printing and sign shop, combined with the personal attention to detail and the integrity of a local vendor. After all, great printing is strategy with creativity. Adco Printing and Graphics, located at 353 Grand Boulevard in Vancouver. Find out more at adco1.com. That's ADCO, the number 1.com.
Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support of Beacock Music. Family owned and operated since 1976, Beacock Music is your source for an extraordinary selection of products, experts, and a fun environment. Find out more at beacockmusic.com or call them directly at 360-694-7134. And by the generous support of Harmony Road Music School. Did you know a child who participates in a music program does better socially and academically? Give your child a head start with music lessons from Vancouver Harmony Road Music School, led by the direction of Mr. Robert Bolton, a teacher with over 25 years of experience. Find out more at harmonyroadvancouver.com or call them directly at 360-256-4670. Harmony Road Music School, your home for comprehensive music education.
Many thanks to Ruby Ribbon. Ruby Ribbon is your source for shapewear, leggings, skirts, dresses, jackets, and swimsuits that empower women to look and feel their best while going after their dreams. More information available at www.rubyribbon.com/Jody Akers. That's rubyribbon.com/JODYAKERS.com or directly at 360-601-3901. Like they say at Ruby Ribbon, bye bye bra.
Local businesses do a lot of good work in the community, but it gets pretty exciting when you combine these good works and the performing arts. And we have that right here in Vancouver in Roar Voices. As described on their website, Roar Voices, also known as Roar, is intimate and brave storytelling, always with an underlying theme of empowerment. When you attend a ROAR event, the voices are from women of our community who have stories to tell. And these stories are of hope, love, stories of passion, stories of courage and wisdom that heal and inspire us all to be better. And with us on the program to talk more about this, I'm so pleased to welcome the executive producer and creator of ROAR, Erica Wirth. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for taking the time to meet today. So we're standing in front of the historic Kiggins Theater in downtown Vancouver. And before we get into the details of ROAR, can you tell us the history of ROAR and how you got it started?
Sure. I was writing a book, and I am also a storyteller, and so I perform a lot in Portland. And after doing this one particular show, I was wondering where the all-female storytelling companies were. And so I started investigating it, and I couldn't find any. So I decided, first I doubted myself and went through all the thing of that, no one will come, and you can't do this, and who do you think you are? And then I woke up one morning after having a dream with the word ROAR, and I said, that's it, I'm doing it. So I started contacting women I knew and trying to find a venue, and then I found the Kiggins, and Dan was gracious enough to partner with us and give us a permanent home, and that was the creation of ROAR.
That's awesome. So you mentioned the name ROAR. I love that name. So what's the inspiration behind that name? Tell us more about that.
Well, I wanted one word, and so originally I was like, raw, no, that's not it. It's just too raw. And then I thought femme fatale, and I thought, no, that's not it. And literally for 2 days there was just this nagging thing going on in my brain, and then I had the dream, and I woke up, and ROAR was literally just, I couldn't not call it ROAR. So that's how it started. And then the more that we get into this and the more stories we tell, it really is becoming like a movement for women and for allies, for to just speak our truths and talk about shame and all of those things that you mentioned earlier, and give permission for other people to have those, have their voices. And I think women's voices are exceptionally important right now. And so there's that thing that, you know, we don't whisper, we're not silent, we ROAR. So that's sort of the impetus behind all that.
So when you first got started, you mentioned that it was kind of hard, you know, wondering, oh, are people going to be interested in this? How was your first show? Was it difficult to get started?
It wasn't. The most difficult thing has been me, overcoming me. I'm always my biggest obstacle. The fear that went into it, the exposure, taking, you know, being a writer is a very solitary sort of thing, and you just find a quiet place and go write. But to take these stories, to write them is one thing, to share them with the world is another thing, and then to do it on video is a whole other element. And so I really had to walk through my own self-doubt, and but it feels more, this isn't just a hobby or a passing, this is feels like a calling for me. It feels like something that I'm obsessed with, that I had to do, and I feel like all of my life experiences led me to this point. The first show was great, and the storytellers were amazing, and it all just came together. It has, from the very beginning, like every door just keeps opening for ROAR. It's always me walking through the fear. That's the, you know, what if they, whatever, all of that stuff. And it's such a personal, you know, I'm also a corporate businesswoman, but this is my heart and soul on stage, and so it's more vulnerable to attack, per se, than, you know, a private investigation agency. So it just feels so much, the risks feel so much higher because it's so much more heartfelt. But that's the point, right? That's when you know that you're doing something you're supposed to be doing, when it's scary and it's, you know, it challenges you. So ROAR definitely has been doing that for months now.
So what advice would you give folks that are maybe in a similar position to overcome that fear, to take the next step? What advice would you give them to help them do that?
Well, as a serial entrepreneur, my head is never going to give me permission. My head is always going to tell me I'm missing something, I don't know something. My best advice, and I tell people this all the time, is life is messy. Get in there, get dirty, roll around in it, and make mistakes. Mistakes are where you learn, but don't not do it. I think doing something and failing is so much more important than not doing something out of fear. And that's one thing all the storytellers walk through, and just in general, like, fear is not a reason to not do something. And so to take the thing that terrifies you the most and walk through that, that's where you get self-worth and self-esteem, and that's where you get life experience, and that's what you bring to whatever business you're starting. I think all entrepreneurs have that sense of, you know, I knew I was strong and courageous before I started my detective agency, but I didn't know how courageous I was until I became an entrepreneur, because you literally have to walk through self-doubt all the time and then make huge mistakes and then have staff witness them and lose clients and not have financial stability and figure out what that means and, you know, things like that. So I encourage anyone, if they have a passion in their belly and there's something that they need to do or say, I am 100% behind anyone doing that. I think the world needs more of that right now. So
when was your first show?
Our first show was May 25th.
And what was the storyline? What was it about?
It was mother. So partly because it was the birth of this new baby of mine, and it was also Mother's Day month. And it was phenomenal. The women that came together, the stories that they told, which are all available on the website, were just so much more than I could have hoped for. And I knew all of these storytellers, and I handpicked them all, especially for the first show. But the way it was just really, it was really special. Yeah.
So how has this been received in the community?
I think the community has been amazing. We get, it's amazing to me, the people that comment on it and the people from out of state that are hearing about it. It's spreading with women like wildfire, which is incredible to be a part of. And also there are so many women doing similar projects or projects that are just about female empowerment in different ways. And we all have that same motivation and drive, like we just want to hear what we have to say. And so there's been this amazing, Roar is not just a show, it's also an opportunity to promote whatever these storytellers are doing in their other lives. If they have websites, if they have companies that they're doing, if they have other shows they're doing, if they have books they're writing, that we want to use this as a platform. We've opened up the blog to guest bloggers if somebody has something that they really want to say. We're starting the documentary in a few weeks, actually. We'll be filming here at the Kagans starting September 20th. And just about hearing as many women as possible, but it's astounding. There's something resonating with women, and I'm getting a lot of that, and I'm getting a lot of emails from random people that I've never heard of before that say, you know, I just watched a video. I've never been to a show, but I watched the video, and I just love what you're doing. And there's just this passion about it and this energy, which I know I'm passionate about it, but to see other people respond to it is really quite amazing.
So I want to get into the structure of the show. So those of us that think about, you know, how often do you have it? How long is it? Does it cost anything? How many storytellers are there per show? Like, what are the basics about the show itself?
Okay, so generally the show is every other month, and the costs are always $15 pre-sale, $20 at the door. And then there's five storytellers, so we do three and then an intermission, and then we do two more. And then I will throw in a story in the second half that's usually 5 or 10 minutes. The show is generally an hour and a half long, depending on intermission. And the length of the stories. Each woman gets between 10 and 15 minutes. So some do 9, some do 16. It depends on the stories.
Sounds like we have a lot of great storytellers. And we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk more about storytelling and how you help folks become better storytellers. So we'll be right back with more from Erica Wirth, creator and executive producer of Roar Voices, here on The Common Good.
Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support of the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation. NWCAVE helps to inform and educate the prevention of violence against women and children. They have a dream, a world without violence. Learn more about how you can help at nwcave.org.
You're listening to The Common Good. I'm Joe Clemens. We're here at the historic Kagans Theater with Erica Wirth, creator and executive producer of Roar Voices, an all-female storytelling event that empowers women. So, Erica, before the break, we were talking about the storytellers. Telling a story for some is natural. Some people are just natural storytellers. Others, I bet it's not so easy. I know that you and I talked before. You do a lot of work to help people overcome that. So how do you help women be better storytellers?
I mainly teach them that it's okay for them to use whatever their authentic voice is without trying to make people laugh or make people cry or sound a certain way. The storytelling that people respond to the most is the most authentic, the one where you really do just let it all hang out, whatever that is for you. And I just help put it in a format that works well for storytelling, but still is true to their voice and their words. So that's what I do. It, basically, if they're going to say something, we had Leah Bear in our Freedom Show in July, and she told a gripping story about this horrific childhood event that happened. And she's okay now, but this story I knew was going to trigger this audience. And it was, you know, I have to do a trigger warning in advance and the whole thing. And so with her, we just talked about letting the audience know that she's okay in the beginning and establishing that. And then you can take them through this journey and then end up okay. But the stage is not the place to process group therapy stuff. It's not, you know, you don't want to just lay a bunch of stuff on the audience and go, thanks, I'm out. So that's the main thing. We did a Girls Roar show, and some of them had very specific, these were teens between 12 and 16 years old, and two of them had very specific ideas about their parents. And knowing that this was recorded, knowing that they're teenagers and they have just teen angst stuff, that I worked with them to tell more of the story and less of the finger pointing and more of just the feelings. Our opinions don't really matter, but our feelings and experiences matter a great deal. So that's ultimately the formula with any storyteller. And I'm also getting a lot of women that come up after the shows that have never done this before, but they really want to. So I'm thinking of maybe creating a workshop space for people that don't necessarily know if they want to do it in front of 200 or 300 people, but perhaps they just want to go through the experience of curating a story, walking through the fear, and then performing in a group setting. So that's something I'm looking at too in the future.
So how about us guys out there?
Yes.
How can we get involved?
Oh, come. It's such a perfect date night. And a lot of my friends, boyfriends, and husbands come. And I'm always so grateful when I see the men in the audience, because it's not, yes, it's all female, but it's not about just women. And the men that are there to be part of the conversation. And it's so important, especially now, to just feel heard by men. And afterwards, I remember I went out with my friend Inga and her boyfriend John, actually two shows that they've been to, where he, and this is like, he's a veteran, he's a big, burly guy, and he was so moved by what he saw and so affected by it that it was really, I know what women are going to say and do, and you know, but to see the men's response has been incredible, and to hear their reviews, to see the reviews on the Facebook page and on the website, that this is impacting them as well, and that they do care, and that they're not, you know, I think there's this misperception that a lot of men just don't care what women have to say and they just block us out. I don't think that's true. I think there's incredible men out there that are trying to figure out the solution like the rest of us, that are just trying to figure out how we can all be part of something bigger than the chaos that's happening. And so, by all means, we welcome men to come. And the men that have come have always had an amazing experience, so it's been really cool, and they're the ones that come up to me afterwards and hug me and say thank you so much, and it's just very sweet and very unexpected. So
I know you have a lot of other things in the works. You mentioned the book briefly and the documentary. Can you tell us more about those things?
Oh yes, I'm finishing up my memoir, and it's called Broken Bits and Glitter, and it should be out early next year, I'm hoping. And then the documentary, originally I wanted to capture middle-aged women. I'm 47, I'm coming up on 50, and I just don't see a lot of older women, mature women, represented in the media. We have Helen Mirren, we have a lot of British ladies, and then we have Meryl Streep here, but we don't really have a lot. Even Susan Sarandon and Glenn Close, these amazing powerhouse women, they maybe do one or two projects every few years. So I really was missing that. I wanted to just hear their voices, especially after the election, and we don't try to, we definitely stay out of politics, but I want to hear what women have to say, because I feel like there's so much men talking for other people that I really wanted to hear what women have to say. So I called my friend Leslie and her husband, and they have a documentary film company called Conspicuous Pictures. And I asked, I said, you know, I have this idea for a movie. What do you think? And Leslie and I have known each other since we were in our early 20s. We worked at a theater in LA together. And she said, let's do it. And she said, what does this look like? What do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to interview mature women and talk to them about feminism and what their value is and what they thought at 20 versus what they think at 50, 60, 70. And she said, why don't we pull it back and do Roar and just do the whole thing? So that's what we're doing, is we are filming the creation of each show and interviewing different storytellers. But in the vein of that is I want to talk to 15-year-olds about what they think their value is, what they think their voice means, what feminism means to them, what privilege means to them, versus let's ask a 65-year-old woman of color what that means to her. Let's ask a 55-year-old Muslim woman what that means to her. Let's ask a 73-year-old amazing woman who's overcome all of these challenges what that means to her. And so that's what the documentary is going to be, is just more of the conversation.
How can the community help you fulfill your mission with Roar?
Well, definitely show up to the shows. We love to see people, and it makes the storytellers feel so good. There's just this power to storytelling. We have all this technology, right? And we get lost in Netflix and chill and all of these. There's all these ways to check out, and there's something about live storytelling. This is what our ancestors did. This is how we passed down history before people could read and write. We told stories. So there's this reconnecting with who we are as people, and we're just people talking to other people. We're not actors. We're not doing written things that somebody else wrote for us. We are literally telling our truths. And by doing that, there's this connection that happens with the audience that's amazing. And then they get affected, and then they take that into their lives, and maybe they reach out and connect to other people. So the more people show up, the more they can connect. Obviously, check out the website and look for what we're doing. And if they want to become a part of it, contact me. I'm always looking for new voices. And if we have a show booked up, we'll figure out a different way. But I just want to hear from the community. So
one question I always like to ask folks who do projects like this is, what is your day job? Because we all know doing stuff we love doesn't always pay the bills. So what's your day job?
I am a private investigator. I have a company called Collective Intelligence.
That's probably a topic for another show. There's probably a lot of good things to talk about.
Lots of good stories about surveillance, yes. I'm good at dinner parties.
So where can folks learn more about Roar? I'm sure there's a lot of places online. Where can they go?
And the main place is roarvoices.com, and also the Facebook page, which is Roar Fierce Female Storytelling. That has the videos on it. It's got the blog. It's got upcoming events, things like that. So that's the best way to get information.
Erica, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about what you're doing to make our community a better place. And I really hope you'll come back on the show and tell us more in the future.
Thank you so much for having us and for lending your audience and your platform to our voices. Thank you so much.
Thanks. So I'm here at Portland Art Creations with James and Robin Dunbar. Hi, guys.
Hello.
So, right off, one of the first questions I have to ask you is, you're located here in downtown Vancouver, but you're called Portland Art Creations. So, tell me that story.
Okay, so it's a good question. We have been asked that a lot. We come from the Saturday Market over in Portland. We've been there for 7 years now, and originally, our business was operated under Dunbar's Fine Art and Design. And we got really tired of it being linked with our last name because we wanted the business to be the business, and we kind of wanted to be somewhat invisible at some point. And our daughter, Kate,
yes.
and Kate, she came up with this great idea. Portland Art Creations. And so then I told James that I came up with it, and he liked it. And the cool thing about Portland Art Creations was it's great for Portland. That's where we were working at the time, only Portland. But PAC, Portland Art Creations, we really, okay. really want to be known as the PAC. We want the PAC to be the cool place to go to find really great art and inspiration. So, yes, it's Portland Art Creations because that's what we've been known as. But going forward, we're focusing more on the PAC. We live here in Vancouver. We love the city here. We love getting connected to different communities in the city. And I think the PAC works.
So let's talk a little bit about passion for art. I mean, it's obvious in your pieces that there's a lot of passion for the art, specifically local art, because a lot of your visual scenes are around local places, local scenes, and things like that. So tell me a little bit how did you get started? What was your inspiration for becoming an artist?
Started a long time ago. I started with Norman Rockwell, the work that he does, the inspirational message that he sends through all of his paintings with kids really stuck close to me. But if I was to go back before that, I met a guy named Jerry who now works for Walt Disney, and he sat in front of in our living room. They stayed with us for a while, and he ended up working for Walt Disney, which I just said. But he drew Fred Flintstone and Wilma and Dino, all those good things, cartoons. I was so impressed by it that I started drawing every day. And I guess it was a knack I had. I ended up getting better and better as time went. And a stepdad I had, he used to hang everything I had, whether it was just a stick figure or an elephant, whatever. He hung it on a wall, made me feel like a great artist. So I ended up painting from that day on.
How about for you, Robin? What's your inspiration for being an artist?
My background is in music. And art is many, many different things. And I think to educate people about that, if there are still people unaware that it's not limited to an amazing brush or knife on the palette with the canvas. But I knew about 15 years ago that I wanted my future to be immersed in art. And I was single, and it was really bizarre. I met James a few months after I had written that down, that I wanted to marry an artist. I had no idea what that meant. I just thought that they would be a more well-rounded, in touch with the real stuff, you know? And art is such a therapeutic, such an expressive tool to lighten, brighten the moment, the day. I mean, I see it all the time when people buy the paintings and come back and visit and say, I wake up every morning happy because I see your painting as soon as I get out of bed. It's about so much more than that. But my start was in music and writing. And so that stirred this passion of just knowing there's more than the 9 to 5, crush it out, you know, do something on the weekend, dread Sunday night because you're getting ready for the Monday night. But you have to do what you love. You have to find it. And so many people think when they look at our work, whether it's here or at a show somewhere outside, all the time they'll say, I don't have any talent. I could never do this. I don't have any gifts. And for me, it's a great opportunity to just speak into their life that you absolutely do, and you just need to find them. You know, it's not limited to what you see here. Just find them. And that's what I do at the shows. I sell his art and I talk to people and try to inspire him. That's what gets me really jazzed. But if you're gifted with something and it just makes you just vibrate at like a high level, like all day long, you're supposed to be sharing that. You have to find your avenue to share whatever it is that makes you want to get up every day. You have to find your avenue, and it's out there. And you just focus on that, you'll find your art, and you'll share it. And there's so many things that open up because of that.
Does the business of art ever weigh you down, like being a business owner? And does it ever feel like a job?
Yes, it does. It feels like a job, but it's one in which it's something you love to do. So any time that you love to do something, you get an opportunity to do it, it's not a job. It's actually a pleasure. So it's a lot of sweat and tears, but it's a beautiful, beautiful situation.
It's totally a job. It's a business. The times when it's great is when we're connecting with people, and whether they're buying or not, or whether they've bought in the past and they come in to say hi, or they bring their family or somebody new, that's so refreshing, because it's in those moments when I'm reminded that we found our art and that we found the avenue and that we're sharing it, and it's blessing lives.
But why is art important to kids?
It's a good source of development. It helps them express themselves. Most times kids don't get an opportunity to be heard by adults. And when you turn, ask me as a kid, and I can kind of relate with a lot of kids just growing up, because I remember the situation. You may not have anything to do. You may not have anyone listening to you. But when you get a chance to express and draw figures and put things on paper, it makes you feel really good. Whether it be a house, an animal, or whether it be anything, you just feel good about what you're doing. So I think it's real great for kids to have art in them. You never know what kid is going to come out to be the next Picasso.
say I'm a parent and I have a kid who has an interest in art, or me as a parent, I'm trying to have them try to express an interest in art. What's a good way for parents to kind of get kids into that, to kind of help some development?
A good way is, like you said, doing the events. Go to the Saturday market, the Vancouver Farmers Market, introduce them to artists, let them see what it is for artists and what they do to make things happen for themselves. Introduce them to different subjects online, which is art-related, and you'd be surprised how much they pick up.
Yeah, turn off the TV, turn off the video games, create a space of time during the week that's their creative time. And give them all the supplies they ask for, clay, chalk, paint, and just Legos. Just let them start identifying with creation and just have that be part of their weekly curriculum, so they're going to learn that side of themselves and it will grow and they'll find their art.
Robin and James, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with me today and to tell us all about your passion for art.
Thanks, Joe, so much. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, appreciate it.
And that's our show. I want to thank my guest this week, Barbara Richardson from Metropolitan Performing Arts, Roar Voices creator Erica Wirth, and the ever-so-talented Robin and James Dunbar from Portland Art Creations. Be sure to tune in to other great local shows like Hello Vancouver, Unfiltered Radio, and X-Ray in the Morning. On behalf of all the volunteers and supporters of your local community radio station, I want to thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again right here on The Common Good.